Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, November 12, 2018. South Sudan police disrupt a concert aimed at promoting peace in the country.
Yeah, and we have our forces who are on the standby for such function. So if they have taken the permission, they must certify with their document that there is a force that has been given to them to protect them.
And armed youth kill two police officers in Jonglei State.
That it is one of the incidences which is very rare here in Bor. We know that Bor can misbehave to themselves. They fight themselves. But if government interfere in any form, either a police or a prison or whatever, it is very rare that a citizen turns up and fight against him.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan police shut down a peace concert in the Rock City suburb of Juba on Sunday. A deputy police spokesman claims the organizers did not have permission to hold the event. Activists with the Anna Taban group say the police should respect citizens' right to freedom of speech and expression as stipulated in South Sudan's constitution. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
The event organized by the local peace advocacy group Anna Taban was halfway through its performances of live music and poetry readings when two trucks of armed policemen drove up in police trucks and shut down the public address system. They ordered hundreds of youth attending the concert to leave the area immediately. Jacob Bull, co-founder of Anna Taban, says police should allow citizens to exercise the rights guaranteed in the country's constitution.
You go through all this process, of which is actually we feel it's in shrinking into our rights as activists to speak up, or rather to, you know, to communicate. We have the right of assembly, we have the right of expression, and this is what we are exercising.
Bull says he hopes that with the signing of the revitalized peace agreement, government security operatives will gradually allow people to enjoy the rights as citizens. Colonel James Duck, deputy spokesman for the South Sudan National Police Service, confirms that police closed the concert because its organizers did not first obtain permission from police to hold the event.
The permission must go to us. After it is passed by Juba, we must also be knowledge, then we will send them our forces to guide them. Yeah, and we have our forces who are on the standby for such function. So if they have taken the permission, they must certify with their document that there is a force that has been given to them to protect them.
Colonel Duck says there is good reason to require that organizers of public events, including free concerts, seek permission in advance to stage such events.
Any events that take place within Ubeki states or outside the states, they must get permission from the Minister of Interior through Ubeki. Because last time there was a problem of gangsters at San Quesito. They made a party, then they started shooting. They even wanted to grab a rifle from the police, and then two persons died.
Before police moved in to shut down Sunday's event, Ayak Chol, co-founder of Anna Taban, told hundreds of youth that South Sudanese artists want South Sudanese youth to participate in the peace process.
Our mission is to ensure that young people in South Sudan play their role in ensuring that there is peace in this country. Peace is not going to only be signed on the table of politicians. As citizens, we have a role to play. And as Anna Taban, we are doing our role by advocating through art.
Peace, peace, peace. Peace, Ayama.
Yuchubum, an activist with Anna Taban's Nairobi chapter, says activists teamed up with artists to spread the simple message of peace.
We are doing all this one for the love of our country. You see, as South Sudanese, I don't need anybody to pay me anything or anybody to tell me that do this one and that. But as South Sudanese, I feel like it's my responsibility. After all, your home is your home. If you don't take care of it, nobody's going to take care of you.
The Anna Anataban founders did not disclose whether or not they plan to organize similar events in Juba or other parts of the country, and if so, whether they would obtain permission from the police in advance. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Two police officers were killed in Jonglei State Capital Bor over the weekend. A police official says a dozen of armed youth were defending their friends and exchanged gunfire with police after the officers tried to arrest two suspects accused of breaking a man's arm. Deng Gai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Jonglei State Information Minister Atong Kwol says the two officers were killed in the line of duty.
These two men in uniform were doing our country and our state a honor, because what they were doing, as in every country, is protecting their citizens, enforcing the law. And in every country there has to be, all the citizens have to be law-abiding citizens. And if these laws are not followed, then this is where these individuals come into force. And in this incident, it's unfortunate, and the government condemns this because this act should not have happened.
Jonglei State Police Commissioner Major General Chola Tim Jonget says the violence started when the policemen went to arrest two suspects for failing to pay the fine of 6 cows in Bor County Court for breaking a man's arm. Jonget says the suspect resisted and began firing at the police.
It was one arrest given to a police personnel called Manuel Malit Arau against the accused to Ayunatan and Maror Arok. When he went and got them, the two accused went into clashes with the police, in which these clashes led to the beating of the police and removing this arm of the police, beaten, then shot, which later on took to the hospital. He went and passed away. With the continuing of the vehicle, they shoot, kill one of the police called Aramutun Arok on the spot, with the three others injured. These three, they were seriously wounded.
Philip Thornyok, a lawmaker representing Botown in the Jonglei State Legislative Assembly, is condemning the youth for shooting police officers.
What happened, I said it myself, that it is one of the incidences which is very rare here in Bor. We know that Bor can misbehave to themselves. They fight themselves. But if government interfere in any form, either a police or a prison or whatever, wearing the uniform of the government, it is very rare that a citizen turns up and fight against him.
Nyok says he's been informed that the youth resisted arrest because they feared being tortured by the police. Botown resident John Kudju says it's disturbing that the area youth should fire on the police who were trying to serve arrest warrants.
We are urging the youth in Bor, whenever you have been summoned in the court, that not to be the case for you to take law into your hand. So you have to report yourself when you are summoned by the court authority. And also to the police, when you need someone to go and answer some question at the court, you need to come in a right way with the summon in your hand. Then the person can respond to that.
Bor resident Ayuin Makir says while he too fears he would be tortured if arrested, he does not encourage anyone to fire on police officers.
Most of the people now fear that if I'm go to the police station, I will be tortured. I'm telling my youth here in Bor, or our youth here in Bor, if you are needed by the police, you can go. We don't entertain violence. So that issues of violence are not, they cannot solve anything.
Police Commissioner Jonget says police officers have arrested 2 young men and are looking for 10 others who ran away. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
And here in the United States, there have been 2 mass shootings in as many weeks. One at a synagogue in the eastern city of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and the most recent one on the West Coast, at a bar in a suburban neighborhood near Los Angeles. For a new generation of students growing up in the United States, mental preparedness for a mass shooter event is a fact of life for many. VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports from Los Angeles.
Candlelight vigils have become all too familiar images in the United States. The shooting in Thousand Oaks, California means reliving a nightmare for Kayla Sanford, who survived the mass shooting in Las Vegas, Nevada in 2017.
I've lived a year now through it. I guess this just really hits home for me. I can't imagine what these people are going through. I've been to this bar many, many times. I love college nights.
On her way to give blood, she never expected another mass shooting would happen so close to home.
It doesn't get easier to hear, but it gets more normalized. It's desensitized completely.
At the same time, it haunts her.
I think twice about going anywhere, honestly. Not just here, I mean the grocery store, the mall.
From a shooting at a bar in California, to a Jewish synagogue in Pennsylvania, to a school in Texas, all these mass shootings happened within a year.
To live in a constant state of fear, that is terrorism. That's what terrorism is. And I think that this needs to be called exactly that. You know, we are living in a state of fear within our own country, within our own borders, amongst ourselves.
Grace Fisher showed up to the scene of the Los Angeles area shooting, demanding action on gun control. Fisher says she fears for her own children.
Some people are like, oh, it's another mass shooting. And it's disgusting. You know, I'm sick to my stomach every time it happens because I sit there and I empathize and I put myself in those kids' shoes, in the parents' shoes, and I say, like, how could they think of, say goodbye to their child and say goodnight to their child, like, and then wake up and find out that they may not be coming home ever? And that's not okay. And all these kids who have been killed in schools.
Parents and teachers now have to have those conversations with kids who are in school. And what are you going to do if this happens? You know, what is your plan? Where are you going to go? And they shouldn't have to worry about that.
I think that the problem in this country is multifaceted. It's going to take a multifaceted approach to solve this problem. But to say that guns are not the problem is a total cop-out.
As Americans deal with mass shootings through activism or caution, they adapt to this new reality, and many will teach their children to do the same. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at South Africa land reforms. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What tricks do you use to memorize something?
I read a lot, so one thing I do is understand. If I understand something, it means I'll memorize it.
Mostly writing down in my notebook or sitting down and take much of my time thinking a lot about that thing is when I can try to remember.
Constant repetition. I repeat the thing as many as possible, in 10, 20 times, so I have to stick. And if there's any graphic or pictures around the thing, it also helps me to memorize it.
I usually memorize using acronyms, you know. For example, if I want to remember something, I just take the first alphabets of the thing and then acronym.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Like most African nations, South Africa seeks foreign investment as a way to help create jobs and grow its economy. Recently, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa sent Trevor Emmanuel, a one-time finance minister, to New York to attract investors. That may have been a tough sell for some, given South Africa's plan to create a new land reform policy to get more farm land into the hands of black South Africans. According to the government, blacks own only 4% of the country's individually held agricultural land, while whites own 72%. The ruling ANC party has said, if necessary, it may confiscate white-owned farmland without compensation, although the government appears to be months away from drafting a formal action plan. When VOA Adam Phillips interviewed Trevor Manuel, he discussed what he called disastrous stewardship of the economy under former President Jacob Zuma. Zuma was forced from office in January.
So part of what we need is a message to investors about reigniting the flows of investment into South Africa. We need that to lift economic growth. We need economic growth to create jobs. We need jobs to improve on the quality of life of all of our people.
But I understand that the unemployment rate in South Africa was nearly 28% at the end of July. That's up nearly a full percentage point from January.
Look, it's very hard to do things in the absence of economic growth. In circumstances where our budget has taken a huge knock because of bad decisions over the past decade. But I think that the big issue is that government is rebuilding the trust of its relationship with the majority of our people. And trust is going to be the lubricant of the relationship between ourselves and those who invest in our country.
You speak of trust, and yet the government plans to appropriate and redistribute lots of land held by whites.
The commitment to openness should not in any way interfere with a commitment to justice. In our constitution at present, Section 25 allows for expropriation in public interest or for public purpose. And that clause of our constitution requires legislation so that it's not arbitrary but will be overseen by the courts. And instead of just listening to shouts, President Ramaphosa has appointed a panel of 10 experts, academics, lawyers, and farmers, both big and small, to ensure that these voices will be heard. And part of the people participating in the process are large white farmers. One of them is Mr. Nick Serfontaine, who's a big cattle farmer, and he's a very good mentor to black farmers. But there are also representatives from AgriSA who represent organized white agriculture. You can't prevent land reform, but you need an approach that is rational, ordered, and predictable. This is work in progress.
Yet there is enormous resistance and fury among many white South African farmers.
Look, some of the people who are shouting the loudest actually acquired land under apartheid without having to compensate anybody for it. There is a particular group from South Africa called AfriForum. They are crude racists. They would find a lot of joy in parts of the US where you've had sort of neo-Nazis marching. And I don't want to use this rare opportunity to speak to Africans through Voice of America to actually give credence to the propaganda of groupings who actually have no credence even in South Africa.
Are you saying that whites who oppose the land reform are actually what we call white supremacists here in the U.S.?
I'm saying that that's at the epicenter of it. Other people are participating in rational discussions about this issue. What's very important is that we don't pretend that apartheid was not a history of dispossession of black people in our country, that apartheid did not favor one group of people over the other. And because we recall the injustices of the past, there is the presumption that we will do something about it. Now, you can't ignore these things forever, because the vast inequalities, I think, become a breeding ground for animosity and the breakdown of democracy. We've got to deal with it, but we can't allow mob rule. We can't allow crude, unplanned occupation of land, but we can't ignore the reality of land hunger either. We've got to get the balances right, and I think that that's a signal that President Ramaphosa provides to everybody in South Africa.
But can't that also send a signal to foreign investors that their assets and earnings in South Africa may not stay protected and secure?
No. The best approach in dealing with prospective investors is honesty.
That was Trevor Manuel, South Africa's presidential envoy on investment and a former finance minister. He spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. In Kakuma refugee camp in northern Kenya, new solar power systems are changing people's lives and giving them a chance to make some money by providing services to other refugees. As Mohammed Yusuf reports for VOA, a solar panel are always fastest growing source of renewable energy.
Jerome Busoga fled the Democratic Republic of Congo and found safety in a refugee camp in northern Kenya and a job in this barbershop. Solar power provides electricity that makes his work and his income possible.
I like my work, but it would not be
possible without electricity. And here in Kakuma, there would be no electricity without solar power.
World Bank figures show 6 out of 10 people living in sub-Saharan Africa have no electricity, and the situation is even worse in rural areas. That is changing, according to the International Energy Agency, which says the use of solar panels to generate electricity is expected to grow faster than all other renewable power technologies combined. Clean, reliable and affordable power has opened doors for many refugees, extending hours for studying and working, and providing opportunities to start businesses.
I said if I start at 12, then I buy some chargers, I start charging the phone 10 shilling. So it means most of the people will come to me, then I'll charge the phone, then I'll get that amount. That's how the business idea came into my mind, because of the power. Because I saw in the community there's no power.
Since I installed a solar system at home, I have seen a lot of difference in my family. My children can study. We don't have to go far to charge the phone and the radio. We do everything at home now.
B-Box is a UK-based off-grid power company. The company was set up in 2010 and has since sold 150,000 of its solar home systems. The system allows customers without access to electricity to power lights level. And small appliances.
And this is the second level. As a business that is investing on solar energy, so we look at Kakuma as like a potential market because there's no electricity grid.
That report was prepared by Muhammad Yusuf in Nairobi. Still in Kenya, public service vehicle operators have called for a nationwide strike Monday over new rules aimed at curtailing the country's deadly road accidents. Edwin Mukabana, chairperson of the Federation of Public Transport Operators, says owners of the matatu businesses and operators want clarification on the government's new guidelines. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the government issued new guidelines following a series of deadly road accidents.
According to the National Transport and Safety Authority of Kenya, for the last 10 months, more than 2,500 Kenyans have died of road accident. The authority says the main cause of these accidents are drunk driving and overspeeding. However, Federation of Public Transport Operators Chairperson Edwin Mukabana says the public service vehicles are going to boycott transport from today, Monday, until the government clarifies the guidelines it imposed on public vehicles, which they feel are unclear and discriminatory.
I don't think we want to call it a strike. What we are saying is this. We are asking our members to comply. And we are saying we will withdraw our vehicles until we get clarification. New guidelines which we feel are unclear and discriminatory, noting that we had written to CS Transport and Infrastructure and are yet to receive an invitation.
According to the National Transport and Safety Authority regulations, a public service vehicle should have a speed limiter, safety belts, and yellow line painted on it. The regulations also says drivers and conductors must have uniforms and badges. Their photos should be prominently displayed in the vehicles. But for years now, most vehicles have not complied with these guidelines. Director, National Transport and Safety Authority Francis Major says from today, Monday, all public vehicles must comply with the law.
We are really talking about safety and the need to protect the human life. SACCOS play a very important role in this. So we are centering on the key risk areas, speeding, issues of overloading, dangerous overtaking. Those are some of the key issues that we are addressing them. And the need for them to have licenses, because we know operators who are on the road illegally without any license, both the SACCO and the drivers. So those are the things that we are telling them they need to be in compliance with the law.
Last month, 58 people were killed when a bus traveling from Nairobi rolled at Fort Tenan in Kericho County. Interior Cabinet Secretary Fred Matiang'i and his transport counterpart James Macharia insist that there must be a crackdown on public vehicles to save lives.
We have to change these matrices. We have to end this anarchy on our roads. We have lost far too many people. Any long-distance bus drivers, police commanders, if they do not have two drivers, if they cannot display their pictures and so on, arrest them where you find them. They park at the next police station. That's the end of the story. Be ruthless about this.
Corrupt traffic police officers and the National Transport and Safety Authority officials have been blamed for the rising number of road accidents in the country. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Police shut down a peace concert at a venue in Juba yesterday. The event, organized by the local peace advocacy group Anitaban, featured South Sudanese artists who use songs, poetry, and paintings to call for peace across the country. Organizers say the police should respect citizens' right to freedom of speech and have allowed the concert to continue. The event was shut down halfway through when two rows of trucks of armed policemen entered the venue. Police told organizers to shut down the event and the public address system. They ordered the hundreds of youth in attendance to also leave the area immediately. Jacob Bull, co-founder of Anitaban, says police should allow citizens to exercise their rights, including freedom of expression and assembly, as enshrined in the country's constitution. Jonglei state officials are condemning the killing of two police officers in the state capital Bor on Saturday. A police official says while officers were trying to arrest some suspects accused of breaking a man's arm earlier, about a dozen armed youth banded together and defended their friends, exchanging gunfire with police. Jonglei State Information Minister Atong Kwol says the two officers were killed in the line of duty. Jonglei State Police Commissioner Major General Chol Atem Jongath says the violence started when policemen went to arrest the two suspects. And finally, the U.S. was hit with two mass shootings by gunmen on opposite sides of the country in the last couple of weeks, one at a synagogue in the eastern city of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and the most recent one in a suburb of the west coast city of Los Angeles. For many students growing up in the U.S., mentally preparing for a mass shooting event is now commonplace. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Samira by Abie Jazz Band. Listening to Abie Jazz Band with the song Samira. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Would like to know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. If you're going out of Juba Town where there are no VOA FM stations, you can still listen to us on shortwave. Our frequency is 11850 kHz, 13865 kHz, and 15180 kHz. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.